AWG, Shares Magazine, November 2025. Vol. 1, NR. 7, Editorial Department, Annie Midla and Saul Iacob cover, by Alyssa Fox intro, about Autistic Women's Group by Annie Midla, about this month's cover, Seagulls of Long Beach by Alyssa Fox. Quotes of the month, from Nina Simone and Sylvia Rivera Cusikinkwi audio art, Night Creatures of the Little Lakes by Elena Korolova, Autism Chrysalis Life Coaching. What to Expect in the Later Identified Autism Journey by Heather Cook, essay, erased. 2015, by Mornike Jiwa Aniwu, S. Autistic People's True Colors by Andrea. S. Isn't It Romantic? By Emmy, photo. Nature Always Welcomes Us Just As We Are by Darling, book. With My NT Husband by Natalie Diggins, portrait. Internalized View of Self by Hunter Grant, short story. Kia's Meltdown, a children's story by Stacey Plate Acca, Ren's mom and Ren, 8 years old. Trigger Warning, portrayal of autistic suffering and meltdown, flash fiction. Web of Bliss by Christina Donaldson, comics. Bathrobe Gal, Holiday Survival Tips by Sarah Jane Cody, sticker. You Matter by Alyssa Fox, content 1. About Autistic Women's Group. Established 2021. https://autisticwomensgroup.com. AUG is an online support group for late-identified autistic women and all other members of marginalized genders. The meeting format is designed to reduce the sensory, social, and executive function burdens that normally come with socializing. Our members are clinically diagnosed, self-diagnosed, and questioning. AUG is volunteer-led and not associated with any umbrella organization. Company, please consider joining us on Zoom. Our member profile is inclusive. Meetings are always free and no registration is required. Members share by speaking or typing. We have many members who come just to listen. You never have to turn on your mic or camera if you don't want to. You don't have to come to every meeting or stay the whole meeting in order to be a full member. Disclosure of diagnosis/gender identity is welcome but never required for participation. Click her to learn more about. Attending a meeting. You can also see upcoming meeting topics, sign up for meeting reminders, scroll the homepage to find the sign-up form, join the AWG subreddit. Hope you enjoy AUG Shares Magazine. And please do join us in a meeting sometime if you can. Annie Midla, founder and facilitator, AUG. Content 2, about this month's cover. Seagulls of Long Beach. Alyssa Fox, image description. Picture of a flock of seagulls flying on the open sea with a sunny blue sky. This month's cover features a photo taken by my late husband, Jordan Fox. He was on a fishing trip off the coast of Long Beach. While he didn't catch a thing, he did snap this great picture of the seagulls waiting for a snack. My husband was such an important in my life. We together 17 years. I felt so supported, cared for, and loved by him. We were able to move to new countries and travel around the world during our time together. Having him as my partner gave me the strength to keep trying when things felt too much. He accepted me as I am before and after diagnosis, and was always invested in coming up with new ideas to make life more manageable for me. Not sure how to go forward without him, hoping with time can learn to trust life. Will forever be grateful for the love Jordan brought to my life. In memory of Jordan Michael Fox, June 14, 1983, October 7, 2025. Content 3, quotes of the month. Quotes relating to autism and AWG values by autistic and non-autistic people. Have a quote you'd like to share? Send it for inclusion, quote 1. Talent is a burden, not a joy. I'm not of this planet. Do not come from you. I am not like you. Nina Simone. Quote 2. The possibility of a profound cultural reform in our society depends on the decolonization of our gestures and acts and the language with which we name the world. Sylvia Rivera Cusikinkwi, CHXNAKX Uxiwa, a reflection on the practices and discourses of decolonization. Content 4, Night Creatures of the Little Lakes, sound composition, by Elena Korolova, elenakorolova.com. This composition is made from sounds recorded over 4 nights in June 2023 near Little Lakes on the territory of the Anishinaabeg Nation, also known as Huron County in Ontario, Canada. These lakes are located in an old-growth forest, which is currently under the threat of erasure by a gravel company. While the community has worked diligently to protect the forest and its irreplaceable ecosystem, the gravel company hired experts to an environmental assessment which uncovered no significant and specifically noted that there were no amphibians in this area, you might believe. This statement if you stop by for a moment during the day, but if you happen to be there after dark, your ears will tell you a different story. This composition features green frogs, American, coyotes, red-winged blackbirds, black-capped chickadees, mourning doves, roosters, red squirrels, crickets, raccoons, rabbits, beavers, and a few unidentified species. Image description. Black and white picture of pine trees on a lake. Photograph by Elena Korolova. Released September 20, 2024 on Forms of Minutiae as a part of the Harkening Critters compilation. Content 5. What to expect in the later identified autism journey. Heather Cook, Autism Chrysalis Life Coaching. https://www.autismchrysalis.com/. Are you figuring out as an adult that you're autistic, not broken, weird in a bad way, or wrong after all? And figuring out what that means for your life. This describes what to expect after you figure out as in that you're autistic. The five stages we predictably go through. Our individual circumstances, lives, and personalities are all unique, but there are some reliable patterns to the journey and some consistent hangups that block progress. This is a recording of a workshop hosted by Heather Cook of Autism Chrysalis in 2024. You can read a full transcript of the video on the Autism Chrysalis website. Visit Autism Chrysalis and follow Heather on social media. Content 6. Erased, Morinike Jiwa Aniwu, first published on the author's blog Just Being Me. Who needs normalcy, anyway, reprinted with the author's permission. Dear autism community, especially autism parents, far too frequently the and experiences of autistic are dismissed by autism parents. Not by all parents, of course, but too many. We are told that we are too high functioning to understand what you are dealing with. We are told that we cannot understand the severe autism that some of your children have. We are told that we cannot speak for your children because we are too different and that we don't have the same needs. There are a lot of things wrong with that generalization a lot, but I'm only going to address one of them right now. And that is that it needs to be remembered that there are autistic adults out here who are also parents of autistic children. I'm far from being the only one. We are many. My perspective as an autistic adult would be relevant even if I had no children. As an autistic parent of autistic and non-autistic kids, it may be even more so in certain circumstances. By failing to acknowledge me, you have disregarded me not once but twice. To separate me from my own children, because of something as arbitrary as age, to me makes as little sense as it does to ask someone who is biracial to choose what race they must identify with instead of respecting that they represent both. While I doubt it is intentional, sentiments like this are as they are disrespectful and dismissive. Image description. Picture of a pencil eraser with white background. Photo credit. srzen.com. By disregarding my perspective simply because I am an autistic adult and not an autistic child, you erase me. You erase me from my past as an autistic child. You erase me as a parent who has the same dreams, hopes, and fears for my children as you have for yours. Just happen to have a neurology different than you. You erase me from my lived experiences and all of the gains that I've fought so very hard to make. You erase me. Content 7. Autistic People's True Colors, Andrea. https://medium.com/@andrea355 image. Colorful? Of exploding colored powders, orange, red, and blue. As far as I can remember, I never had a favorite color. I had two, more specifically, two colors next to each other, not blended, not separately, but the combination of them. They changed at various turning points in my life. As a kid, it was light blue and black. In my 20s, it was mustard and dark blue. Now, after my life has gone through big changes, it's become dark green and white. Have no idea what governs this relationship to colors, or why each combination seems to contain a synthesis of the previous one. Black plus light blue equals dark blue. Dark blue plus mustard equals dark green. It just happens on its own. Just know that one day I looked at a picture where dark green and white were combined, and I had the same feeling as when you fall in love. No kidding. It was like my entire nervous system was thanking me for giving it a break by looking at that particular combination of light waves. It was such a feeling of relief that I instantly knew. need to redecorate my entire room with those colors, and I will be able to relax in it. It makes me wonder about that autistic can have with color. Find the relationship between humans and colors fascinating in general. A close of mine is a hairdresser. Color is a science to her. She will remember the gradient down to a level of detail that I never considered. There are very colorful cultures and very gray ones. Each has particular colors that suit them aesthetically. The relationship with colors in art has changed over time, with evolving taste and technology. Certain colors evoke certain natural environments. I find it all fascinating. Almost exclusively dress in black. Don't know exactly when it happened. Just know that at some point before I realized, looked at my wardrobe, and it was all black, like I was a thief, a vampire, a ninja, or all three combined. Even when I strived to try out more colorful at the shops, always ended up buying black. Maybe it was my way of mourning during depression. Was just mourning, nothing in particular. Everything, but most likely, it was just because black absorbs all light, and my pupils needed a break from being assaulted with light. White on its own is aggressive. It invades my eyes. Orange makes me uneasy. Darker colors are soothing. Warm light is more flattering to all colors. Fluorescent light, on the other hand, is an insult. Colored make me flee the room like someone's after. Me, the light going through orange-brown autumn tree leaves shocks me for how beautiful it is. Purple and sand is a great combination. And sometimes, think of the universe to imagine an endless, quiet, colorless space. Pure peace of the senses. It's relaxing to imagine. Autistic people have sensory sensitivities. That does not only mean overwhelm. It also means often incorporating colors in our lives in unconventional and artistic ways. Know of an autistic person who loves red. They wear red, their hair is red, and they have taken the name Red. It's part of their identity because it's woven into their very perception of the world. My two autistic parents, who are as opposite in personality as day and night, have been respectively obsessed with red and green their entire life. Many autistic people like colored lights, rainbows, iridescent things, or observing the nuances of color in nature. Many others may particularly like the type of light and color that surround us can be really important for some of us. We are creatures receptive to our environment. More often than not, like those plants that need an exact amount of humidity, light, and soil composition in order to grow. They are usually the ones that give the most extravagant flowers. Of extravagant colors, content 8. Isn't it romantic, Emmy? Isn't it romantic? Well, my certainly seems to think so. Can't seem to stop conjuring up these potential conversations in my head. Imagine what someone would think if they were watching my life. Dream up meetings and exchanges that haven't happened and are often unlikely to ever happen. What is it about my mind that needs to meticulously plan interactions? Seem to need a script for every conversation so that I'll appear competent, interesting, and likable. It feels sort of desperate, like I'm trying to convince myself that I can hold my own or be appealing to others. The sad reality is that the interactions I dream up rarely ever, if ever, come to pass. Have this lingering need to be wanted and appreciated, and seen that dreams up scenarios where I am cool, calm, and collected in. People in and leaving them wanting to know more about me. Why does this fixation persist? It seems to grow more incessant, unwilling to be ignored, and bleeding into my thoughts in a never-ending spiral of grandiose experiences and idealized interactions. Currently, it permeates my mind and colors my days, and I, if its pervasive presence is due to the recent discoveries I am making about myself and my ability to the world around me, is it because have this gnawing insecurity about myself, convinced of my weakness, and needing to prove to others that I am strong and capable. Want others to approve of me, and I can't seem to find self I turn. These romantic, almost storybook scenes that come to life in my mind feel fake and saccharinely sweet. They are enticing but exhausting as I spend immeasurable amounts of mental energy on picturing them and acting them out in my inner monologue, and I'm left conflicted. Feel stupid and silly for having these thoughts, almost like a child that believed in the tooth fairy for a little too long. Have this itch that burns up the roof of my neck as I fall into these visions of my future, and I feel ashamed, but to them, it feels so childlike and immature. Why do I need others to care and approve of me so desperately? What is it about? Me, don't like these patterns, but feel powerless to stop them. During times when these delusions swim through my mind, tend to lose a sense of control. Take more risks and try to find a way to exert control over my body. In the past, it has been piercings, climbing to the edge of cliffs, and drinking to excess, but more recently, I find myself trying to exercise control over pain. Push my body to its limits, drive too fast, pull out hair, have a frantic need thrumming below the surface. Quiet but steady hum that rests under my skin, nudging me in the direction of risky behavior and obsessive thought. Very tired. But at the same time, a sense of unrest is nesting deep within me, causing tension and friction in my body. A constant push and pull for control that strips me of balance and routine and leaves me feeling lost in a world I have unwillingly created. If a romance, then most certainly it is a toxic one. Content always welcomes us just as we are, darling. Image, picture of a colony of many mushrooms growing one on top of the other to form a tiny mushroom hill. Location, forest. Content 10, interview with my NT husband. Excerpted from the Autistic Toolbox by Natalie Diggins. This interview has been edited for and flow. For tools for autistic adults, read the entire chapter here for free or purchase the book, image description. The Autistic Adults Toolbox's book cover. Natalie, thanks for agreeing to talk publicly about our relationship. Are you nervous? Husband, not at ease. That makes one of us. Let's dive in. When we first got together, you didn't know that I was autistic. What were your first impressions of me? Well, you were certainly very different than anybody else I'd ever met. You were completely logical, unemotional, and organized beyond any standard I was ever aware of. You were, of course, hot. You know I'm going to edit that last part out. Note, I was overruled. And you were deliberate in everything you did. Nothing is left to chance. Nothing is left unplanned. It took some getting used to. That's fairly accurate. How would you describe your own approach to life? And specifically to relationships, it's a good question. Would say up until that point, was more reactionary and less proactive. Also planned a lot less, as far as relationships go, would say I led more with emotion and less with reason. In my previous long-term relationship, was the less emotional one by far, though I was still very emotional. It was new for me to have that world flipped. Remember one time, but forget the exact details, when I reacted in a certain way and you basically said, you get to do that once, but that's not how we do our relationship. I'm like, wait, that's not how we do this. Thought that's how you did it. Learned a lot about how to have a better and stronger and more respectful and less volatile relationship from you. Think, I know the instance, and it was our first big argument. You sort of exploded. That's when I came up with the never fight dirty rule. This brings up how we engage in relationships differently. How would you say that we each do so based on our individual neurotypes? One thing jumps out immediately. If we do have a fight or a difficult discussion, the fight helps me work through whatever I'm feeling and whatever is happening between us. Having the discussion is not at all helpful to you unless there's agreed action at the end of it. You want it to end with a series of steps that will be taken so that the argument doesn't happen again. And I view life as a series of these things. You can't keep from happening, but you fewer and further between, you make them less volatile, you manage them better. But the goal of essentially eliminating conflict is new to me, since I don't believe it's possible. Don't spend a lot of time worrying about it. Wouldn't say that I am trying to eliminate conflict, although I wish I could. More pragmatic than that. Feel we're aligned on the outcome, a supportive, loving relationship. But how we get there is different. Talking about the issues, you feel better, almost like a pressure release valve that lets off steam. It drives me. Nuts to keep having the same fights repeatedly. It's like the movie Groundhog Day, where the same day repeats over and over. If I go through the anguish and the emotion of having the conflict, expect things to improve. And the only way in my mind things improve is if we agree to outcomes and to do things differently the next time. Earlier, you said that you hadn't met, like me before, but I know you've had other experiences, autistic people. How has your perspective on autism changed since we met? If it has, the first autistic person that I knowingly talked to was Temple Grandin, the academic and ethologist who gave a TED talk about autism. Learned from her that someone can have autism and be highly functional. But for that, what I knew about autism I learned from watching Dustin Hoffman in the movie Rain Man. Then, a friend's child was diagnosed with autism, and it gave me another example of what it can look like. All these people experience autism in different ways, and it validates. Why ASD is called a spectrum. Autism doesn't look any one way. What I've learned from you is how difficult it is for people with autism to live in a world designed for neurotypicals. Every day I watch you and see how hard it is. Appreciate it. Although I won't ever truly know how hard it is because haven't lived it. Thanks for recognizing that and for not trying to fix me. I'm very blunt and I approach life in a scientific manner. Despite meaning no harm, I sometimes hurt your feelings. How do you handle situations where I'm too direct and analytical for your comfort? I cry. No, you do, and I'm sorry to put you through that. It guts me when I hurt you, and I've been trying to give you reassurance before saying what I think, but I know I don't always get it right. I mean, it's hard. If I didn't respect you, I wouldn't care what you said, but I do respect you, and sometimes I disagree with you. But even if I do, I still respect you. I don't ever want someone who I love to feel that I failed them. Here's a fundamental difference between us. If I'm giving feedback on you, me, or us, it's not an indictment of you, me, or our relationship. Know that we're not perfect, and I just want to be better. Can see that I've wounded you with my words, but because they weren't meant or said harshly, don't understand why I've done so. I'm at a loss at both my intention and what I perceive to be a lot of hard to accommodate you. Making your life easier is a big part of my everyday living, and when it's not done right, or it just didn't work, or whatever it is, it's hard on me. It's like the guy who goes up to bat at the World Series with bases loaded and strikes out. Mean, it's just that feeling that I stepped up and took my shot and I failed. What I've learned from you is how difficult it is for people with autism to live in a world designed for neurotypicals. Every day, I watch you and see how hard it is. You bring up the accommodations that you make for my autism, and I very much appreciate all the things that you do for me. One reason I think our relationship works is that you also appreciate the things I do for you. Even if we were both NTs, which we're not, we would be making accommodations for each other. The for us is that the accommodations you, for me, are due to the way my brain is wired, whereas the accommodations for you are related to your life experiences. And I use in the chapter on NT/ND romantic. Relationships is your fear of dogs and how I help you manage that. And that's a throughout this book. We're all making accommodations in life. Regardless of neurotype, I agree. What's something you've learned about yourself and our relationship, especially regarding how you handle differences, can manage life in much better. Think that it's age and experience, but it's partly being with you and being in our relationship. Can take myself out of a situation better than I used to be able to, and I'm better able to depersonalize conflict. An example is if I get rejected professionally. Don't take it personally at all. I can be a bit more philosophical. What is something you think we do better as a couple because of our differing neurotypes? Each of us optimizes for different things, and each of us recognizes that the thing the other one optimizes for is of doing. In the end, I think we end up having a better life because we balance each other. It would be boring if we were too similar. Speaking of balance, balancing our sometimes contradictory needs is a big part of how we manage our relationship and lives. How do you make sure your needs are met while also considering my neurodivergent needs? Early in our relationship, you taught me that you have to be a strong me to be a strong we. At first, I wasn't good at that. And then, over time, I learned not to worry when you were being a strong me and I wasn't included. Now, don't mind going to social events on my own if you want a night off or if you want to do something on your own. It took time, but I feel we do this well. It's probably because we're secure in our relationship. Want to about something that's particularly challenging for me, my downs. While I've been able to manage my downs better as I age, they still happen. A few months ago, I had a major down, one of my worst ever. It took me weeks to recover. No, my downs don't just affect me, but you as well. How do you approach navigating my downs as my partner? I think the most challenging thing is to understand that at times there's nothing I can do to help. Certainly, if it's because of something I've done, can cease the behavior. Or if it's a situation that's problematic for you, I can help to remove you from it. And then there are times where I'm not aware of what's going on. The downs are mysterious. And I really don't know what to do. Think something you've done a great job with is anticipating crowds and what they do to me. If we must move through a crowd, which unfortunately is often, you sort of get a bubble going around me and try to find a path through the crowd for us that is less dense. I really appreciate that. You see me in great anguish and distress when I'm in a down. How do you cope or manage your own emotions? In the moment, try to manage it. Managing crises is something I do in my job, Anne.